afternoon, Montreal. It is 2:03. That means on CKUT 90.3 FM, you are now listening to Movement Museum. I'm Allison Burns, and I'm here with Katie Bélanger.
Hello, hi, Katie. Allison.
Hi. We have a couple special guests in studio today. Would you like to introduce us to what's going on?
I am. I'm very excited about today's show. I'm very, very excited. So today in the studio, we have Kathy Casey and George Stamos. And Kathy Casey is the artistic director of Montréal Danse. And Montréal Danse this year is celebrating 25 years as a company and as sort of an institution here in Montreal, nurturing the choreographers of Montreal. Montréal Danse is particular in that as a company, the dancers remain mostly the same, but the choreographers change all the time. And so over the course of its 25 years, the names are like the names of the Montreal dance scene. We've seen Jean-Pierre Perrault, Jeanette Lorrain, James Kudelka, Daniel Desnoyers, more recently Estelle Carton, José Navas, Dominique Porte. So all sorts of people have come through the company and have created work on the company under the direction first of Paul-André Fortier and Danielle Jackson, who founded the company and now under Kathy Casey's direction since
96.
Okay, so that's Kathy, and then George.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Is a choreographer who's presenting work with the company next week. So we're very excited to have you both here.
Thank you.
And I would like to start by talking to you, Kathy, just about the sort of like incredible milestone of 25 years as a company, and maybe you can tell me something about what it feels like to have headed this thing for quite so many years.
Well, it's been 15 years that I've been doing the artistic direction of the company, and prior to that there was about a two-year period in which I was directing the rehearsals for the company. So my association has been for quite a long time. It's very time is so strange. It goes fast and slow at the same time. So there's a part of like, my God, how do we, 25 years, that's a chunk of time, and lots of things have happened. And yet there's something that still feels so active about it that it also feels quite short. Hmm. So there came a point when the 25th anniversary was coming. And it was like, well, do we look back? Is a way to celebrate that amount of time by looking back and kind of remembering what we've done? Or is it more about looking forward? And the energy of the company felt much more about looking forward. So I guess 25 years feels like the preparation for the next period to come.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to not see a retrospective.
Yeah. For our 20th anniversary, we did a type of retrospective. We did excerpts from a number of pieces, and we decided to do that in a quite large theater, which is the Théâtre Verdure, which is, 2,000 people, and it's very festive, and it seemed really appropriate. But this year we felt it was more important to talk about the future and taking the time to make a platform for some of the works that we're really interested in promoting and developing.
Well, it seems very appropriate as the company seems to be so much about the future of dance in Montreal and in Canada. So much of the time it's taking choreographers. I mean, when we look at the list of people who've choreographed on the company, many of these people have gone on to found their own company, have gone on to choreograph internationally. I mean, José Navas is now the resident choreographer at Ballet BC.
Yeah.
And with his own company, and he's been choreographing on the company. He's done it more than once.
Yeah, he created quite an important signature work for the company, and I think it was 1998 or 99, called Interlast, and that we toured for at least 5 years. It was this magnificent work at showcasing this very fast and marvelous vocabulary that he had, underlined by this a theme of passing on of dying, which were some important themes for him at that point. So, and then we brought him back a couple of years later, in which he made his first piece of the shift of the work he's doing now, which is much less theatrical mm-hmm. and much more abstract and completely in the body. So yeah, we've had Jose in a couple of times.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see that sort of continuing relationship. You have a continuing relationship with Estelle Clarton
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
She's choreographed many times in the company.
Yeah, we're touring now our fourth project together called S'envoler, which is a project in which her company, Création Estelle Clarton, created the work and we were a co-producer. Mm. And now for the touring, we're in charge of developing all the world touring for that piece.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So I guess I wonder what it is that is for you the most interesting thing about working in a company where you see all of these choreographers come through?
It, in some ways, it's so basic. It's the complete pleasure of diving into somebody's universe that you love. And this is something we get to keep repeating over and over again. We have the chance to invite in people that we fall in love with their work. And so we get in a studio together and we see where we can travel together. And that is a very basic and never-ending experience and adventure.
I want to talk a little bit also about the dancers
yeah.
of the company, because I think that sometimes when we talk about work here in Quebec especially, then there's a sort of cult of the choreographer to a certain extent, and the highlight gets placed there. But I mean, these are people, I think we had a bit of a discussion last night yeah. about the fact that frequently the dancers of the company have been dancing longer than the choreographers have been choreographing, and so they are bringing this wealth of experience
yeah.
to the work. And also I have to say, after seeing the performance last night and seeing Marielle dance a couple of times before now, just spectacular dancers, just like really breathtaking in terms of their physicality, in terms of their emotional range, in terms of their projection out into a group of people who are watching, and in terms of their capacity to do wide range of work.
Yeah.
So I would like to highlight some of the names for
sure.
us. So Dominique Caron, Eleanor Futard, you have to help me. Annick Hamel, who's been dancing with the company
just about 25 years.
25
now.
Years.
Yeah.
And I swear, from the stage, she looks like she's like, what, 25?
I know. She's incredible. She's incredible. No. Ageless. Completely ageless.
She is. She's so beautiful. Rachel Harris, Sylvain Lafortune, Frédéric Marier, who's also been dancing with the company quite a while.
Yeah. Both Rachel and Fred have been working with the company over 10 years as well.
And Peter Trotzmer.
Yeah, Peter Trotzmer is a dancer who worked with us full time, and now he's come back and he's doing two projects with us.
Okay.
I should say that Dominique Caron is no longer with the company.
Okay.
He's now working with Au Vertigo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, Jeanette Lorrain once worked with Marielle.
Oh, there you go.
So
it's a small world, right? Loops and loops and loops around.
All together.
I wouldn't mind talking a little bit more yeah. about those dancers.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting experience to spend so much time, so many years together in a studio learning about dance, because every time you make a new creation, you learn about what are possibilities in dance. You learn about new ideas that are going around. You have to kind of jettison some ones that were important, let's say a few years back, to replace them with new perspectives on what is presence on a stage, what is the physicality demanded, what's the type of generosity and collaboration. And that has really shifted in the last 15 years, the type of projects we're doing. So we have kind of a shared experience around the creation of dance, and the word generosity, it I've come to realize, is as important as any of the rest of the aspects of dancing. The physical capacity of a dancer, their intellectual understanding of dance making, it really can only come forward in a choreographic creation if they have the generosity that necessary to really involve and listen and participate. I'm sure you feel that way too, George.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit, George, about
sure.
about working with these dancers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm interested in what it's like to come in to the context of the company, which exists is sort of totally independent of you, and work that way with them.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to work with these dancers and with Casey as well. As you already said, they're very experienced and they're very talented dancers, and it takes a lot of the pressure off of me in terms of administration and organizing all the logistics connected to making a creation. Mm-hmm. So it's a real pleasure for me to be able to walk into the studio and really just focus on the creative aspects. The way I work is very personal with each dancer. It's different, you know. I feel like there's three really interesting collaborations going on inside of this piece. As well, I should also say that Jackie Gallant, who mm-hmm. is the composer, is also performing live on stage, and she's doing some performance that is a little kind of newer for her, which is really exciting to have mm-hmm. that kind of... She's known as a rock musician and a contemporary composer as well, and to have her energy, her sort of rock energy in the room on the stage is great too. So, yeah.
You know what's fun too in these two shows? You mentioned some of the dancers in the piece we're doing this week, which are Frédéric Marier, Rachel Harris, and Annick Amel. Well, next week, both Rachel and Fred are in George's piece, mm-hmm. but they are used so differently in the two works. Of course, they're the same people, but what the aspects of themselves and their dancing that's brought forward by these two choreographers is significantly different. So what you were saying, their capacity to travel between really mm-hmm. different propositions is quite on display.
Well, absolutely. And I can recall seeing the first time I saw Marielle Danse, which I was saying to Kathy last night, is in 2004 when I was in high school uh-huh. in Western Canada.
So
and so I saw both One Second by Ah Soon An.
Yeah.
And,
choreographer, yeah.
And The Heavens Burning With Ours, Jose Navas, who he always has these beautiful titles, mm-hmm. The Heavens Burning With Ours, such a poetic man. And I mean, even within those two creations, there was such a stark difference between the two of them. And if I can, the images stay with me of both of those choreographers' work, even now, 8 years later. And I think that that's a testament both to the dancing, the like incandescent dancing, especially in The Heavens Burning With Ours. I can remember between the lighting and the nude costumes and the running.
Yeah.
That was
Manon Levaque. Huh? That's another dancer who worked a very long time with the company, a very major dancer here. Mm-hmm. And you were lucky, I find, to get to see her. And she had a main role in both of the works that Jose created on the company. The chemistry between the two of them, there was a really deep understanding of what he was looking for and what she could bring to the process. Anyway.
Yeah, she was I can remember sitting and being captivated in the audience. So I was going somewhere with this. I was going somewhere, and the place I was going was to draw a contrast between, the work that we saw last night, which is disturbing and aggressive and intense and humorous and grotesque. And so the range brought by these people, has there been a very conscious choice to keep the same dancers over years and years compared to perhaps bringing in new dancers every time you bring in a new choreographer?
How to answer this question? This company is an excellent playground for dancers who really want to explore a multiplicity of choreographic voices, because there is both something consistent, because we're working year after year, and yet variable, which is the different choreographers that come in. So for dancers that are really work well in environments like that, it's excellent. And of course, from my point of view, for dancers that have the generosity and the capacity to do that type of work, we can travel a long time together, mm-hmm. because we grow and explore. But I would also say that in the last 5 years, we've come to realize, because dancers stay so long in the company, it's also very important for us that we rejuvenate ourselves, both with the type of works we're doing, which we can get to in a mm-hmm. second, but also by making sure that we have projects where we can bring in dancers from a kind of a larger circle around the company, and that and doing more and more. For instance, I mentioned Peter, who is a Peter Trotzmer, who's a dancer I just love. And he's doing many projects of his own. It's not possible for him to be a full-time member of the company, but it's very important for me that we have access to dancers like that for specific projects. Another one is Sylvain Lafortune, who danced with us quite a few years ago, but he's now back doing a project we're doing with Benoit Lachambe, because it's the right mix of people, and that's just part of the energy we needed for that piece. So there is a certain flexibility on the dancer front nonetheless.
Okay. What is it about George's work and Jean-Sébastien Lourdes's work that you feel is particular to 2012? Mm.
I feel both these choreographers have really strong, potent propositions they bring to the table. They're ones that they're not creating works where you kind of go, oh, that was kind of nice. They're not that type of work. They're saying, this is what I think, this is what I believe, this is how I feel dances can be made and should be made for this idea I'm working on. And that is extremely attractive to me. I'm looking for works that they sit down in front of us and force us to pay attention. And so we're grappling with them, and we become enthused by them, and our bodies get activated. I love in both of these people's works the charge that comes with their dance making. And of course, these are two really different choreographers at the same time, even though for me there are some overlaps. They have a really intense sensitivity to visual image, both of these choreographers. I find they have a playfulness. Jean-Sébastien's, like you say, there's a grotesqueness to his playfulness. But I would say George has got a certain extreme quirkiness that is fantastic. So perhaps I could sum it up like that.
Okay. So, George, I guess I would like to talk a little bit about the work.
And yeah.
We're just going to keep going back and forth like this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Enjoying myself. So the work that you're presenting,
Husk, the title Husk, yeah.
It appears to me like there's a theme going through your work about costuming. Really clear visual propositions. And so I would like to talk about this sense of a skin that we put on and take off in this latest work.
Mm. I've danced a lot as well in other people's work, and so I've been a dancer that's had to wear different sorts of choreographies, and I've always kind of seen this metaphor as making a lot of sense for me, that when you dance, you're just wearing your body in different ways. So that's part of why I've always kind of been attracted to continuing that metaphor into actually the costumes and using prosthetics and things like that. Yeah. Also, I spent a number of years in New York in the 90s, and a lot of my training was from people coming out of the performance art world. And in the performance art world, the work you do, all aspects are considered. Like you're not just focusing on the movement. Or, you know, the costume is part of what you decide. So I've always kind of thought that it's important. It's whatever costumes are being worn is part of the choices that I make as a choreographer as well. So I'm very implicated in that side of it, because it all contributes to the image that you're proposing.
Okay.
I would just say that there is a reference to that, and even in how we're crediting you in this project, because he's choreographer and creative director, because it's very clear his job is, as he sees it, is not just to make the steps and organize in space.
Not
it's
at
it's
all,
the,
yeah.
All aspects, the visual, movement, time, choices are very much a part of what he's doing. So we agree that a creative director would be the appropriate title to give to what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I should say too that we work very collaboratively at the same time, you know, inside of all that. I feel that whatever choices you make about costume and the use of the space are important, just as important as the actual movement, if you just isolate the movement. Why not make interesting choices is how I feel.
It's <You know? laughs> probably a good choice.
I think. Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's a reflection too. That what it seems to me that one of the things that really interests you is well, who are we, and how do we decide from one moment of a day to another which part of ourselves we project?
Yes.
Who you know, we're made up of a multiplicity of beings inside of us, and I feel like you want to bring that forward. And so part of that defining of those different aspects of ourselves has to do also with what do we put on the outside? What do we show to the world?
Yeah.
The husk, you know, that's not for nothing that titles.
Yeah. I think that the way that we project ourselves is so important and such an important aspect of life. And in terms of presence on stage, it's what you really read, what's transmitted is also the personality of the person, who they are as a person, the choices they're making inside the tasks that they've been given to do, be it steps or whatever. And so I really like to connect with the performers on that level and negotiate that, you know, find out what other sides to the inside them do they feel that they could reflect, that connect with the theme or the subject matter, rather than kind of defining a character that they're mm-hmm. to portray, to look at what aspects of themselves that they might not, that, you know, they might not reveal on a daily basis can come out. And that's really exciting to watch too, especially with these dancers, because they've got some really crazy funky sides, you know. So it's really exciting to see what comes out in that process.
I'm really fascinated by how different choreographers choose to work with people that they bring into their process, be it dancers or musicians or whatever. And it's sounding like your desire is to work directly with the people, not just as a body.
Absolutely. I really don't think it's a truth that you can work, that you can, we can pretend that dancers are just material and that the choreographer is making all the decisions and that everything you watch on stage is like a sort of magic show of the choreographer using this material, but we're pretending because dancers are people. They're artists. They make a multitude of choices in terms of what you actually end up seeing. It might be the choreography even, their presence. I mean, that's what makes dancers different from one to the other. You know, what makes a really great dancer is someone who is implicated in the in the activity of performing. They're making choices, you know? Like ballet, if you take ballet as an example, what makes, you know, because it's always the same movements, but then, you know, some dancers really shine because of the choices they're making, who they are, what aspects of themselves they choose to reveal. So that's what interests me. I'm really not interested, and politically very opposed to the idea of presenting the human body as just material.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I appreciate the most about the way work is made here in Montreal.
Yeah.
Is that I feel regardless of the choices that the people make, they're empowered to make those choices, and people are empowered to make choices as choreographers but also as dancers. And I think that that's, you know, in our discussion about the dancers in the company and dancers in other companies who have worked in various ways, it's very essential to the work that gets made here in Quebec that that dancers are empowered to make choices on stage, and that choice isn't erased, you know,
right.
Because I've been reading a lot of critique coming out of the States, and sometimes in a more particular kinds of modern companies mm-hmm. or ballet companies, you know, the choice of this dancer over that dancer is because this dancer has better arches than that dancer.
Right. Yeah.
Or has more extension than that dancer, and they're praised for their extension or for, mm-hmm. I mean, things that they worked very hard to develop, but sometimes they're just frankly accidents of nature. And whereas, you know, when we see dancers on stage, and I'm very interested, I'm very excited to see the dancers, the same dancers from last night in your work, because of the capacity to see an artist who's so full of experience making all kinds of choices in the work. Do you find that, have you left open choices to be made on stage?
Oh, of course. I mean, but I mean, I, you know, I very, I hope very clear with my directions. And there's a negotiation that happens, and I see it really as like seeking agreements. You know, you have both sides to any agreement. And so you negotiate, what are the, where does the agreement lie? And then what are the priorities? So I the way I try to work is to be very clear about what are the priorities of a given moment. And then also, you know, and so one of those priorities might be you have to make completely your own decision at this moment. This is the priority.
Might be you need to have a certain rhythm, and within that you're very free in the actual shape of the thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, the body shape.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it might be important sometimes that I'm not too specific about what they should do, because it could flatten it out, you know, because sometimes when you're too, you can stunt the creative, imagination of a performer by boxing them in too much, which you don't want to do. You know, but you know, it's a moment by moment thing. It's performance. So it's living. And so it's a very delicate work, actually.
It's interesting, because I think we're trying to do two things. You were talking about how here in Montreal, but I think it's broader than that. I think there's many places in the world that are working this way, and where we've come to realize that this collaboration between choreographer and dancer, and even those hats are a bit dicey sometimes to know really what we're talking about, is an essential one. It's not even a I find it's not even a question anymore. It's just such an obvious thing.
We're getting past that.
Yeah, it's like, who would want to be not have their ideas and their propositions on the table? I just can't imagine what would be the point of it. Having amazing dancers in front of you and designed not to listen to anything they could propose. I mean, I don't know, but we're dealing with some things. For instance, about liveliness, we've come to realize that when things are very, very set, it is frequently the case that they lose a certain liveliness that they have when they're first done. When you first try out something, that the body just, it gets ideas because it's the first time and it's juggling with options and making choices.
Right.
But then when they get set, sometimes they get kind of, they get dry. So we're there's lots of different ways we're trying to figure out how do we loosen it up enough that the dancers have room to play and have ideas come in and different energies, but not so open that they feel. It can be overwhelming to have too many choices, certainly, because you need some sense of direction.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a perpetual balancing act. And as because George and I've been around dance making for quite a while now, this is not a process that ends with the premiere. Oftentimes you realize, whoops, you know, a year down the road, you're on the road. You need to loosen it back up or tighten it up again so that it maintains its rightness and its energy.
Yeah. I think working with the senses is one important way that myself and I think many choreographers more and more use to facilitate the performance connecting with the present moment, like what you actually see, with what you actually feel at that moment, so that the performers don't kind of check out and become, you know, just sort of
more automatic.
Somehow. Automatic. I mean, you know, there is a way to work that way too, and some people might make that choice they might make that kind of an agreement, and for them that might even be meditative, and they might enjoy that way. So there are all different sorts of ways to do it, but the way I like to do it is to definitely work with what they see, what they hear, and what they feel in their bodies.
I am very fascinated by this conversation, but we have to go to a short break.
Oh, okay.
And we'll be right back.
Hello again, Montreal. Welcome back to CKUT 90.3 FM. It's now 2:33. I'm Allison Burns, and I'm here with Katie Bélanger, and we're talking to Kathy Casey, who's the artistic director of Montreal Danse, and George Stamos, who is creating the work Husk next week as part of the 25th anniversary of Montreal Danse.
Yes. So I would like to talk about, how long did it take to make the piece?
Oh, how long did it take to make the piece? Well, we started, one of the things that I think is really fascinating about the way that Montreal Danse has adapted over the years too, is a few years ago, Casey decided to start doing these research events, where she invited choreographers in to, just try things out without the idea of necessarily producing a piece. So, and So we had a two-week chunk where we explored ideas. That's looking back, that's really when the creative process began, but at the time the idea was not focused on that. And then since then, I would say there's, you know, over the last 2 years, there's been several little chunks. I mean, as most dance creations are happening, everybody's working on so many different projects. Scheduling is always very difficult and tricky, and so it happens in short periods spread throughout.
Okay. So I would also like to sort of talk about how Montréal Danse and you, Kathy, integrate yourself into the work, and what is the touch that you leave on the work that is produced, is my question.
You know, maybe I'll start by talking about these research event projects.
Mm-hmm. I'm also very interested by that.
George was just referencing. Like George said, I think it's been for the past 3, maybe 4 years, we've begun mini projects as a research concept, because it is important to me that we give free rein to imagination. And sometimes when you're aiming for a creation, you set some limits that have to do with time and stress and a sense of, a sense of having a certain kind of pleasing to do in a piece that can negate some other things that might not be obviously successful. And to me, some of those not obviously successful places are actually where the most success lies. There's a paradox in there. And we've come to learn that if you take away the necessity to create something, actually you can create many times something much more quickly and much more freely. So we've been playing with this supposition that this is a possibility, and we call them research events. And in these research events, we get together, sometimes with the dancers, but definitely myself and the choreographer, and we try and name, where does this choreographer want to go? What's been keeping them from doing wherever it is they've wanted to go? What might be some solutions to that? What could we work on in a studio that would confront some of the difficulties? What might be some ideas that they'd like to do but have no idea how to do, and how could we even kind of try and get at them? So we're trying to name some of where this person wants to go. And then when we get into the studio, I can sometimes play a role of, like the devil and the angel on their shoulder going, that's really nice, but and this is a game, and we have agreed to this prior to starting. That is not necessarily a role I would play when we actually get down to creating. This is a different proposition for me, because then I feel my role is much more about really supporting where this person is and the piece. Research can be about both, there is no piece, but it's about the choreographic path of the person. So that's a broader question. When you're making a piece, you're trying to define a world. So this is another kind of contract together. And that contract is also quite variable. For instance, George is a very natural collaborator. He wants to hear people's ideas. He likes them on the table. He likes to debate ideas and the yeses and noes of how we're analyzing work. He's very good at analyzing his own work. So that would be a part I wouldn't have to play necessarily.
Oops.
Crash. With some other choreographers, it's a quieter role. Sometimes I this sounds ridiculous, but there's a part of me that feels like, in some ways, I'm like a cheerleader, a really knowledgeable cheerleader, saying, we can do this. I know we've only got X amount of time, but it's coming, and let's be brave and completely switch the order of this piece. Let's throw out this chunk, and you know, I know you feel it, and I know you want to do it, so let's just do it and see what happens. This is where teams become extremely important, because we're sharing risk and stress and choice making. So that's a part of the role. There is another role, for instance, that I'm often playing with Estelle Clarton, in which my job is to help her understand how to bring more fully into the body what she's doing. So I'm often working right with the dancers, and we're developing material and trying to push its edges more. Because often she will have very clear ideas of the tone she wants in the piece, but it's not always clear at the beginning anyway. What does that mean? What's the body's metaphor for those ideas? So that would be a way I'm working with her, for instance. And then there's every process, at the very end of the process, there's that mad rush to get all those last minute ideas in. and a mad rush to analyze where is it too long, where is it not, what's missing, what can be pushed farther, how do the lights work, how is the sound level and the tone right, etc., etc. Have we got the right rhythm in this section? Do we need another section of music? Maybe we should need some silence. There's that mad rush in which we're all kind of madly going into an analytical mode and an action mode all at the same time. So all our voices around the table. That happens in every creation. I'm also working with choreographers outside of those contexts in which we're trying to, and that they're even outside of studio contexts. I have a lot of coffees with people and dinners in which we talk about just art making and just, you know, what is somebody even really interested in? It can be very confusing sometimes to know what you really want to do, because there's two aspects to the art of choreographing. There's the skill set, which has to do with manipulating time and space and the body. But there's a whole other part of deciding your content. What subjects really are important to a person, and subjects even as a concept is a little bit dicey. Sometimes they're not so much subjects, but questions one has about that one would like to try and get at through a dance mode. And sometimes that's not the type of thing you can bring forward in a rehearsal studio, where you also need to keep dancers active and busy. So I find that there is a very important part of creation that is outside the studio that has to do with human relationships and talking. So that's another role I do and find important.
I want to go back to something Kathy said earlier and pose the question to George. So some of the things that you went into your research with, can you tell us what are things that you were looking at initially, you know, that you were questioning or concepts that you wanted to explore, and maybe were you... Did you find that the freedom of having... No fixed end date on it was really useful to you?
Yeah, I did. What I came into the process at the beginning with was my kind of all the tools that I have as a dancer and a choreographer, and trying to locate where the talents of the collaborators and my talents kind of meet, you know. So a lot of testing of things, a lot of throwing out of techniques, a lot of physical exercises that kind of that start to propose a universe and a language, a physical language and a way of communicating with each other in the studio. So that's going on. And then inside of that, there's some kind of red herrings to just sort of throw into the room to see, okay, well, does this turn people on? Do people get excited by this idea? Do people think this is boring? Does this freak people out? You know, like things like that. Mm-hmm. So like six crazy masks, you know, act like Mariah Carey, act like a caveman, you know, things okay. like that. Just to try to get a sense for what are people's comfort zones. And at the same time, physically, what do they relate to as movers in terms of techniques, in terms of how they deposit their weight, how they use their, or are they, you know, can they separate using their bones from using their muscles, concepts of yin and yang, et cetera, that are all these kind of physical techniques coming from different experiences I have. So that all kind of, it's very dense in a way, what's going on. And that's what we started from. And then I try and keep note, you know, keep track of like where does it feel right? What's really happening? And also the differences between people, like, okay, well, with this person, they really seem like this sort of turned them on and brought this out in them, but this one really not, you know? So because I felt this as a dancer too, that a lot of times, what can happen is that when notes or directions are happening, they're said to the room, but they might only be actually intended for one or two people. And then what starts to happen is the people that don't need to hear it are the ones that take it on the most. And then you're running around, you're trying to sort of, you know, fix the problem that you made by
fires.
Yeah, it's like, no, that was for them, not you, but I didn't want to make them feel bad. And anyway, so one-on-one is really important, but at the same time, you're in a group. So, you know, It's difficult.
Can you tell me a little bit about the companies that you danced with for a while?
Oh, what choreographers have I worked with?
Yeah.
Well, one of my most favorite choreographers is Sarah Shelton Mann, who is a choreographer from the United States who had a company called Contraband for 15 years. They toured all over the world, and she has invited me to San Francisco to perform with her several times, and we performed, and I performed in her work in Halifax also several years ago. I've also worked with Benoit Lachambe, José Navas, Daniel Desmoyers, Roger Cena, Linda Goudreau. I'm probably forgetting. Sorry?
Isabelle
Van Grimm, yeah. Mm. I'm currently working with Zab Mambangu of company Nyata Nyata. Mm. And I had actually thought that I was kind of finished dancing for other people, but I'm finding with the Congolese African technique that Zab is working with, it's really nourishing my practice as a dancer, especially as someone who's 42 who still feels, you know, quite able to move, but does not want to like put my body into this certain kind of risk mode that I might have before. And this technique that Zab's working with is very strengthening, and working with putting your weight inside your own capacity to take care of your weight, not throwing your weight outside of yourself, which, you know, is a good way to go. You don't want to get hurt.
Yeah, absolutely.
But actually in dance, a lot of in contemporary dance especially, I think a lot of the aesthetic is built around actually putting your weight outside of its capacity, of your capacity to take care of it, and seeing how the dancer survives these extreme situations. The aesthetic can be really based on that. So in terms of sustainability, that aesthetic, as you know, age, becomes, you know, difficult.
Unless, of course, you're Louise Le Cavalier, in which case you're like a superhuman.
No, but I would say the way she's very smart and how she's doing it. She is working within her capacity to take care of her own weight.
That's true. I think maybe she has a greater capacity than some other people.
Yeah, we'll practice, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I also, you've done some other things besides just dance.
Yeah.
And that has got to inform your work. So you've been an activist.
Yes.
You've been a go-go dancer.
Yeah.
Which sounds like fun.
Can be, yeah. It's actually really hard work, go-go dancing. You know, if you can imagine doing really intense cardio for 4 hours at a stretch in a room full of people that are drunk and having to ask them to move their drinks and be really friendly the whole time. and there's no fourth wall. So people jump up and think that they, you know, can touch you, and, you know, you have to deal with all kinds of stuff. Mm. But yeah, fun. It depends on the music, I think. The go-go dancing, the fun gigs are when the crowd is really I should say that I'm I don't know that a lot of people, I feel so old when I say this, but like go-go dancing, I don't know that people understand what that is anymore, because I don't know that it really happens the same way it did even 10 years ago when I was doing it, because it's not I'm not talking about stripping, I'm talking about dancing in nightclubs where there's a DJ and they have hired dancers to wear kind of sexy clothes, eccentric clothes, performance art sometimes is happening, and you have pedestals or catwalks, and these dancers come out and they're sort of like cheerleaders in a way to try to get the crowd to feel more permissive about, you know, more liberated about, well, if the go-go dancer's going that far, I guess I have permission to be, you know, more loose. That's the job of the go-go dancer, and I don't know that that really happens as much now. I don't know if you know, but
I'm kind of a homebody. I don't really outside of my house, unfortunately. Yeah. I think I might if there were more go-go dancers, or if I could be a go-go dancer. That sounds like a lot of. I'm interested because that's such an intense experience to put yourself into, an intense context, and such a fourth wall free context. Do you feel like that has influenced the way you ask your collaborators to work?
I really do, and I feel that it's been very interesting for me to be a dancer in contemporary dance situations where I see the choreographer propose this thing that they're sort of struggling with, and then I realize, oh, that's like something that I'm totally over because of all the go-go dancing, like going really close to people, mm-hmm. like having to deal with talking to people at the same time as you're dancing, like working with them, sustaining a rhythm for a long time and having stamina for that. So I feel like the work I've done in clubs or like improvising as well, because you know you're improvising the whole time, and you know you're basically improvising for hours and hours, and so that's really informed my practice as a dancer and as a choreographer, I think, as well. Yes,
I think that's fascinating.
I worked with a choreographer for a really long time in New York, Lar Lubavitch. I don't know if that's a name. This is a very big name, and he was a go-go dancer as well.
Oh, really?
That totally informed his work, especially his earlier works. Absolutely, there was a liveliness to his work at one point. I think that would not have been possible. If he hadn't had that kind of very freed and particular experience of go-go dancing. Yeah. He always put it in his biography.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
It's important. Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of undervalued, like, you know, so many things are, but it's not sort of thought of as such a artistic practice, maybe, but there's really quite a lot going on.
Maybe this is a good opportunity. I'm really interested in the relationship to music in dance right now. And so I think I'm interested to know what your relationship to the sound in your work is. And I also am interested to know, are you seeing, Kathy, some trends in the way music is used? So maybe we'll start with George.
Well, one thing that I think maybe naturally I'm just like as a dancer, but when we were just talking about go-go dancing, it's true that all that go-go dancing also like really is working with rhythm, you know, and working with rhythm is very important for me. And also working with a live, even though in the club it's the DJ that's, you know, doing a limited amount of remixing, there's still something live going on. And that's important for me when I create, that I feel like there's a cohabitation with a live musician or live aspect of the sound making. Like in Husk, this piece that's happening next week at L'Agora de la Danse.
Plug.
8 o'clock. Jackie Gallant, who I mentioned earlier, she's the composer and she's a musician as well. And she's playing live guitar. She's playing live drums. And that, it's very different from a CD, you know, like the feedback of the call and response that you get with that live situation is very exciting and it's really important for me. It's interesting for me to note how, because I've been questioning it, why am I able to do this African contemporary dancing? Because there's no reason I should be able to do this with Zab. I mean, I didn't study African dancing, but something of what I've done in my dance career and my relationship to music and rhythm and the call and response of movement and rhythm is aligned with, you know, the African traditions that have informed so much of what we do in life that we sometimes don't realize until we get more information on it. So it's getting educated about how, you know, the roots of the African traditions have informed contemporary music and dancing. I always knew, but it's really more profound even than what I thought of before.
Hmm. Okay. Kathy, trends in music.
I was listening to George speak, I was also kind of going through my mind a kind of a chronology, or at least my take on music. I'm thinking how there was a period where it seemed like everybody was using already created music in their works. You know, there was now I'm going pretty far back, but you know, you take a Steve Reich piece or something like that, and somebody would try and really understand the structure of that music and bring it to life into a dance piece. That we have a long history in dance of that type of work.
And Therese de Keersmaker?
sometimes, yeah. Joan Baez. And that last one of her solos she brought here was so fantastic, how she was using that. And then there came a period when we got lots more composers. I mean, there's always been composers making pieces for dances. But there became more and more the obviousness that music needed to be created for the piece, so that the dance wasn't following the music, but the music was more following the dance. And so we had lots of, and still do have lots of pieces created around what ever choreographic, whatever piece is coming forward. And as computers have gotten more powerful and laptops are just everywhere and you can get really sophisticated music programs inside a laptop and top and bring it into the studio, there, music's being created as we're creating the dance in the studio. So this was another big jump forward I found in what's been happening in dance and music relationships. But of course now we're seeing more and more people putting the musicians on stage, and the musicians as DJs, in the sense that they are also making choices on stage. As dancers have become more and more making choices on stage, the necessity to have the music be able to follow what that choice making becomes really essential. So there's the kind of the necessity on a music front to have the music there, but I think there's also an understanding we want to expose all that's going on in the dance. So we don't necessarily want to hide that there's somebody live playing music, because there's that version too. We have that in our show that we're doing this week. One of the pieces, you don't see the musician, but he's absolutely following what's happening on stage live. Mm-hmm. And in the second work, he's on stage. But I think there is an understanding that music making in the moment is a part of the piece, whatever you think about it. It is. And even if it's just a DJ who's on stage making his choices, it informs what's happening. So we see that happening more and more, that the music is a part of the visual aspect of the piece. We happen to be going where they're actually become performers in the piece. So I, that would be a part of how I see the relationship developing.
I think it's so interesting. I'm constantly fascinated by the musical choices that are being made, because I mean, we still have, I mean, Daniel Levilli a couple of years ago, his entire work, the soundtrack was Chopin.
Yeah,
you know. Mm-hmm. And it was beautiful.
It's interesting, because then it becomes, the radical action becomes to not do that. This is so funny how this works.
Yes,
you know
absolutely.
What I mean? The radical a radical gesture would be for to do a music visualization. This is something we've kind of rejected in the dance field, and yet there is something very powerful in that. So those who brave that terrain and try to match a very imposing music, I think it's radical. But
it
I wouldn't
does.
Have said
it becomes,
that 10 years ago. I said, it's just got to cop it out, you know? And that's funny how that works. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. And in some ways, it would be very radical for somebody to choreograph something extremely rigid, with no choices for the dancers, and for the only choice to be either to submit or to reject the extreme.
To quit, you mean?
Pardon?
You mean to quit?
To quit, essentially.
Well, I don't think that's so radical, and I do think that actually happens.
Do you? Okay.
I'm sad to say.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry to say. Yeah.
Okay.
But again, I do think impossible for that to really happen. I think you can just make an agreement that for whatever reasons you will tolerate or even be inspired by that kind of a relationship with a choreographer. And but in fact, you can't erase the fact that we are people.
Mm.
So you can't, you know, even if you can break it down to the choice of where they're focusing their eyes, how the rate they're breathing, their posture, you know, there's always choice.
There's always choices. And I think what we're about to see in Husk coming up this week is the, from what I understand, from what we've been hearing from you and then from the press material, is this sort of divide, this sort of dichotomy between the body that enacts the choices and the person who's making them, or the body that enacts the choices, both of the person who lives the body and the person who has instructed the body.
I don't see it as a dichotomy in George's work at all.
Okay.
I think it's playful. I think there's a total acknowledgement of that shifting of kind of roles and choice making. Interesting you said that.
Yeah,
because the word dichotomy comes up in the press material.
Oh, well, it's so hard to write about dance,
it is,
isn't it?
And that's part of the reason I'm giving you this opportunity.
But the dichotomy doesn't lie there.
Okay.
There are some dichotomies that have to do with masculinity and femininity and the play between them. But that's another kind than what we were just speaking about, it seems to me.
Well, I think one thing that's really fun to embrace is that we're doing in this piece is the fact that, you know, for example, are you in your body when you're having your hair cut? Yes, I think so. Are you in your body when you're laying on a beach thinking about how great you're going to look with a tan? Yes, I think so. So these things that we do that are not quote unquote natural, but our you know, ways that we decorate or enhance our body are also valid, really okay, fine places to be. So it's not about a sort of struggle between the two. It is more about this playfulness of embracing just that life is like that. We are like that as humans. And also to bring power to the body.
We have 30 seconds.
Oh, we have 30 seconds. Okay.
Yes. So I think we should tell me when your show is. And
okay, so the Husk opens next Wednesday on the 8th and runs through the 10th at La Gare de la Danse at 8 o'clock.
And this week we continue with Jean-Sébastien Lourdes' work, both Vert and Trois Peaux, which continues tonight and tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's
also missed.
Not to be missed. Yeah. Very intense work, very strong proposition. And that continues at La Gare de la Danse as well. And you can get your tickets from La Gare.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you both. We've been talking to George Stymos and Kathy Casey. Kathy Casey is the director of Montréal Danse. I'm Katie Bélanger. Alison Elizabeth Burns has been quiet but extremely present. And this has been Movement Museum on CKUT 90.3. We thank you very much for listening.